This webcast is made possible by the listener members of the Classical Network and WWFM.org. Thank you for your support. Between the Keys is an exclusive production of the Classical Network and WWFM.org. Funding for this program is provided in part by listener members like you.
After 2 weeks, he said to my parents, "I have no system. I just want you to know I don't go by any system. I just feel what's needed. And if you would agree to perhaps 3 to 5 years together, I see a long life for her ahead. I would like very much your permission that I can train her as I see little by little if this develops, because this is what I feel about her." Again, my parents, I cannot say how much. They never said no.
This is Jed Disler, artist in residence for the Classical Network, and welcome to Between the Keys. I am very proud to be devoting this week's episode to the artistry of Anne Shine, a wonderful pianist and mentor to many piano students. She is celebrating her 80th birthday on November 10th. We just heard Anne Shine in her own words and also in music of Chopin, the B major prelude. In 1980, Anne Shine launched a series of 6 recitals in New York City, spanning just about all of the great Polish composer's major works. 2 decades earlier, she made her highly acclaimed Carnegie Hall debut. She remains a much active recitalist, chamber music collaborator, and a teacher who has mentored and nurtured hundreds of students, just as her legendary teacher, the Polish pianist Mieczysław Munz, helped to mold, shape, and guide her talent from teenage prodigy to one of the most promising young keyboard luminaries of her generation. Anne Shine and her husband, the violinist Earl Carlos, visited my studio several months ago, and we spoke at length about her long career, her formative influences and mentors, including such pianists as Arthur Rubinstein and Myra Hess, and much, much more. We will get to our conversation momentarily, but I'd like to begin with Anne Shine at the piano, performing the Etude No. 11 by Claude Debussy, Pour les arpèges composés. Thank you. Music of Claude Debussy, his Etude No. 11, Pour les Arpèges Composés, with our featured pianist this hour, Anne Shine. Anne Shine grew up surrounded by music, and when we spoke, I asked her about her background and her influences, and just what brought her into music at a young age. Let's listen.
Well, my father, born in Chicago,
yes,
and was a lawyer. Mm-hmm. Eight children in his family. The father, a violinist, came from Europe with a family orchestra.
Yes.
They went to Chicago, mm-hmm, for the World's Fair. So
yes,
that's how our family had a background in that city.
Yes.
And my mother studied at the Chicago Musical College violin. She came from the Midwest, and they had in all four children, and I was the youngest. And wartime, radio on 24 hours a day, lots of patriotic songs. And we had a great Lyon and Healy medium-sized Steinway in the living room, and music and chamber music all the time.
So and you grew up hearing...
I grew up hearing an awful lot of wonderful music.
Did your siblings play?
I have one sister who still plays her violin beautifully. Hmm. I didn't ever want to try the violin, which is interesting. Never wanted to hold it or go near it. But I loved hearing it.
Which is very ironic, considering that you married one of the most distinguished violinists of the century.
Thank heaven. Absolutely. I agree. And they knew a lot of the musical luminaries in Chicago, the teachers, the artists. It was, at that time, a really great, as everybody knows, musical city.
Yeah, they must have known Rudolf Ganz.
Yes, they did.
And did you know him?
No, not yet.
That was way before.
No, mm-hmm. I just heard about him. Mm-hmm. And actually, when you mentioned my wonderful husband, his mother studied at the Busch Conservatory in Chicago with a pupil of Franz Liszt, who went to Weimar. So there is a wonderful connection, even though at that time the families never met or knew each other. Mm-hmm. One Swedish background, one Austro-German background, my father. I apparently heard some of this military music on the radio day after day. Mm-hmm. And the fact was that I went to the piano and imitated immediately with two hands these wonderful tunes that I heard.
So you were playing by ear from a very young age.
I was playing by ear. But then, of course, my alert parents decided that this was interesting. They had a budding piano child.
Yes.
And they brought me to Glenn Dillard Gunn and his wife, who had a music school in Chicago, for advice. Mm. They were very distinguished. He was a pianist, conductor, lecturer, teacher. And they said, as a matter of fact, we're going to move to Washington, D.C. because Glenn Dillard Gunn has been called as the music critic for the then Times Herald.
Oh, interesting.
Before the Washington Post. And my father had been contemplating practicing law in Washington. Not that that made the decision, but it was almost simultaneous that we moved to Washington, D.C., mm-hmm, when I was four. And they took me as a student. And I was with them from age 4 to 13.
And then you went to Peabody. Was Mieczysław Munz teaching at Peabody?
He was. And my parents made three good decisions because I had spent two summers at Interlaken And the second summer, they traditionally still have, I think, a concerto competition. Mm-hmm. And I was playing McDowell D minor, and the Guns knew the McDowells personally, and they were very into the latest American compositions. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, I won that competition.
How
I was
old
13.
Were you? 13.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was 13. And then my parents made a decision that perhaps it was time that I moved to an artist teacher, and they chose three. One at Juilliard, Steuermann. One
yes,
at Curtis.
Edward Steuermann, yes.
Yes, Horzhovsky.
Oh, yeah, Mieczysław Horzhovsky. Yes. That's two Mieczysławs.
Yes, that's right. And the third one, Mieczysław Munz at Peabody. And I played for all three. And my favorite story, and I remember it very vividly because the conversation came over my head from Steuermann to my mother. And I don't know what I played, but he told my mother very graciously that I was talented, but that I would never become a concert pianist.
So Steuermann said
Steuermann
this.
Said that. And my mother was wonderful, very gracious, and thank you so much, and we appreciate it. And then we went to Horzhovsky, who was wonderful, like my grandfather. I thought, oh, I've met my grandfather.
Even I guess, in middle age, he was kind of a grandfather.
Yes.
Because he kind of walked very stooped, and I heard that he always did.
Yes,
but a
lovely, gracious man, and said, bring your daughter next year, because my class is full, but she's gifted, and I would like to hear. Number three. Go to Peabody, where we met Reginald Stewart, who was the director.
Yes, he was the one who brought Munz to Peabody.
To Peabody,
yes.
You're correct. Also a gracious man who had been conductor for Munz over 20 times in Toronto, so I understood.
Yeah.
And I played for him, and he was the one that said, across the hall is exactly the right teacher for your child, he said to my mother. Would you like to meet him? And that was 1953. I was 13. Mm-hmm. And that was the miraculous moment to meet this unbelievable man.
He had a very tragic life.
Right.
He lost his family in World War II. The Nazis wiped them out.
Yes.
He lost his ability to play with his right arm.
That's
what,
right.
During a concert that
yes,
happened?
It was Rachmaninoff Rhapsody, as a matter of fact.
Goodness.
And he could play afterward, but not without great pain, and he stopped. But before that was the greatest emotional tragedy of his life, when he married a childhood sweetheart and the love of his life.
Yes.
And she agreed to marry him, and they had two really wonderful years together. As he came, he also had become Bozzoni's assistant in Berlin at 19. He came from Poland to Berlin to study with Bozzoni. And for those years, probably the happiest of his life. But tragically, she decided that she would leave him for another man. And of course, we know who that was.
Arthur Rubinstein.
That's right. And they had all known each other from childhood. Mm-hmm. And Rubinstein, many years older, had no interest at all in marriage or family until a certain moment when he did.
Right.
And when he did, he sent messages through to her that it was time that she come to meet him and change her life. Mm-hmm. Because she was the one he wanted to marry and have his children, and she left Munz.
Well, we were going to speak a little later about Rubinstein, and it's interesting that last year I was talking with Emanuel Ax, and he also studied with Munz, and he also had Rubinstein as a mentor, as you did too. But but I wanted to ask you, what stood out in Munz's teaching?
First of all, meeting him, I won't ever forget what he looked like. Mm-hmm. He was very slim, with quivering sensitivity and excitement in his whole body. And he met my mother, and he kissed her hand in the old world style. and he had an excitement about him. Although he was very modest, few words, very refined, compelling person, and I felt it. When I saw him, I felt also this quivering sensitivity. He wanted to hear me. I don't remember again what I played. And he told my mother, I will take her. How shall we arrange this? Can you bring her two or three times a week for two-hour lessons? My mother never flinched. She said, fine.
Which is quite a lot for someone of that age to have such intensive lessons. Yet you, yet you would go to Mexico.
That's
you
right.
went to Mexico, I think, for three summers,
That's
if I'm not
exactly
mistaken.
And
you
right.
and you worked very intensely with him almost.
Yes.
It was like piano camp.
That's right. The Olympic camp. That's what
oh
I
my
call
goodness.
It. And I had no idea what was in store. But after 2 weeks, he said to my parents, I have no system. I just want you to know I don't go by any system. I just feel what's needed. And if you would agree to perhaps 3 to 5 years together, I see a long life for her ahead. I would like very much your permission that I can train her as I see little by little if this develops, because this is what I feel about her. Again, my parents, I cannot say how much. They never said no.
Thank you.
We just heard music by Karol Szymanowski, his Etude in B-flat minor, Opus 4, No. 3, with pianist Anne Shine, who is our featured artist this hour on Between the Keys. Anne Shine celebrates her 80th birthday on November 10th, and she continues to perform and to give masterclasses all over the United States. There are many activities scheduled for her birthday season. In December 2019, she will be playing the Chopin F minor concerto with the orchestra at the Peabody Conservatory, where she has had a long teaching association. While in March of 2020, Anne Shine will give an all-Chopin recital at Carnegie Hall. I'd like now to turn to the music of Chopin again, and this is a performance of the Scherzo No. 1 in B minor that comes from one of Anne Shine's very first recordings. It was released, I think, when she was only 20, I believe. Let me read from Ray Erickson's original review in High Fidelity magazine. He wrote that Miss Shine is an astounding pianist with a technique almost frightening in its speed, power, and control. This dazzling facility serves the fast sections of the scherzos well, and in the calmer ones there is a singing tone and some deftly spun phrasing. Indeed. Let's now hear Anne Shine play Chopin's Scherzo No. 1 in B minor. Music of Frédéric Chopin, the Scherzo No. 1 in B minor, Opus 20, a recording with our featured pianist this hour, Anne Shine. And let me remind you that you are listening to Between the Keys on the Classical Network. I'm your host, Jed Distler. Before we get back to my conversation with Anne Shine, I'd like to share a relatively recent recording of hers. It's a really lovely piece by John Patitucci, who is a composer who some listeners might know mainly as a jazz bassist. Yet this solo piano piece entitled Lakes reveals this other side to his musical personality that I think is really quite attractive.
Thank you.
Music of John Patitucci. That was a piece entitled Lakes, L-A-K-E-S. And it was performed by our featured pianist this hour, Anne Shine. When she was 21, Anne Shine recorded the Rachmaninoff Third Concerto, and the recording was brought to the attention of Arthur Rubinstein. I asked Anne about her association with the great pianist. So through the Rachmaninoff Third, you encountered Arthur Rubinstein.
Yes. I spoke about the Polish families who knew each other from childhood.
Yes.
Munsa's family, and I'm going to mention Halina Rodzinska, who married Arthur Rodzinski.
Yes.
Like a sister to Munz. Mm-hmm. The Rubinsteins. This was a huge contingent of, it was like a salon
Warsaw.
Mm-hmm. And Nella's father had been the conductor, the Toscanini of Warsaw.
That's right.
So it was a very special milieu. Halina decided she was going to a 1961 Easter party at the Rubinstein's apartment on Park Avenue. Mm-hmm. And like a kind of fiendish sister, she brought my recording mm-hmm. and put it on. Mm-hmm. And he said, he shushed her, take it away. I don't want to hear any prodigies. No, just go away.
Yes.
So she did take
Probably
it
this
off.
Happened to him a lot.
Yes. He had no patience. But, you know, like the sister, she felt she could come back in about an hour and try again. Mm-hmm. And this time he shushed everybody, she said, and listened to the whole thing. He said, who is it? Where is this person? So she said she lives in Washington and who's her teacher? And that was an absolute dynamite moment because it was totally unexpected. When he found out the name of Mieczysław Munz, they had not met since the separation. He said, bring her to with her family and her teacher. I want to meet her and greet him. So we did. We came. And Munz had to go to the Plaza Hotel to have a whole glass of whiskey before he went.
So he was really apprehensive about the meeting.
Totally a nervous wreck.
I could imagine.
My mother, as always, calm and beautiful. And it was a beautiful meeting. And I think I played a mazurka. He was very interested in what my repertoire was. And that was that for the moment.
I'd like to ask you, what was a typical coaching session with Rubinstein like?
My first time to go to his home in Paris, I played the Humoresque.
The Schumann Humoresque, yes.
Yes, I did. And he was unusually, I don't want to use the word excited, except he said, now I want you to come tomorrow and play it again because I want Nella to hear it. For some reason, and thank heaven, Munz was never, he was never dictating interpretation at all.
Yes.
He guided it. He wanted the person to be themselves. And that's one treasure that his students take from him. Mm-hmm. There was no dictating of any way to play something.
Whereas I have heard from other people who had played for Rubinstein that he could be very, very demanding and very precise about balance, about tempos, yes, about yes. many things.
But this is Rubinstein.
Yes, Rubinstein,
Munz was the one that left you to yourself.
Left you to your, right.
With guidance. I mean, incredible. But Rubinstein approached you like we were equals.
Yes.
Of course, that made your stomach go just to water. Mm-hmm. Of course, that was the way he was. He was that generous. And we'll talk about it. I'm not a teacher. I don't want to be a teacher. I never will be a teacher. But I you have to convince me, and we'll talk about it. And I can safely say that I don't think I ever convinced him. Except once, with the Humoresque, obviously something in it moved him and her and Nella. And he played the Chopin F minor with me on the second piano. And then he said afterward, we both know what a mazurka is, don't we? Mm-hmm. That kind of loving generosity I never had the kind of specifics that you speak of. And I do revere the interview with Emmanuel that you had, because I learned a great deal.
Oh,
number one,
yes.
I had no idea of the relationship as far as mentoring. That's exciting mm-hmm. to me. And the things that he mentioned to him were different.
I think it really depended on the artist,
maybe. On the artist. What Rubinstein did, I went through a lot of repertoire, a lot of Chopin.
Didn't he ask you to sight read the last Schubert sonata for him?
Well, it wasn't exactly. It was the B-flat
posthumous. Oh, right.
That was the second summer in Lucerne. He said, have you played it? I said, no, I'm almost terrified of it, but I've learned it enough. Mm. He said, bring it. Mm-hmm. And then I got really scared. I said, that's not going to sound good. It's going to sound terrible. And then he gave me a lecture about not being professional and that I must bring it and we will go through it together completely. And it's an experience I can hardly put in words because I did play. He said, you're going to play this. And as usual in his generosity, he said, you will outdo yourself with this. Mm-hmm. But when we came to the slow movement, he had a gift for intimacy with people when they didn't deserve it. And you found out exactly how he felt about this slow movement, that it was crossing over. He said, it's the only composer that I know that crossed over. He didn't go and describe death. He crossed over into the other world. Mm-hmm. It's the only one.
Thank you.
We just heard the final section from Robert Schumann's Humoresque with pianist Anne Shine. 2019 not only marks Anne Shine's 80th birthday year, but also it marks the 50th anniversary of her marriage with violinist Earl Carlis, who was a member of the Juilliard String Quartet from 1966 through 1986. I asked both Anne and Earl about when they first met and about balancing artistic collaborations and raising a family.
He came to hear me in London before we were married. He lied. He said he was coming to study some kind of Swedish folk music. But he came when I played the Schumann Concerto with Colin Davis in 68. He heard me there. And what did you say? You saw a little thing come on the stage.
This was the last night of the proms.
Yeah.
Which is a combination of Leonard Bernstein's Extravaganza and the World Series.
A lot of confetti and joy. It wasn't my first one.
And I was sitting in the back of the tub. She came out and said, this little thing comes out of the stage. And then she started to play and the enormous sound came plastic through. So I was very impressed.
So we had heard each other and understood internally that this was something great. It was 3 years before we were married, but it was the right timing. And then I really wanted children. There was never a hesitation there. Myra Hess apparently never thought this would work. I've read that. A marriage and children and a family and a career. She really didn't believe in it, but I believed in it because I had had such a great family and I wanted the children. And then he was gone 75% or more of the time, but he never, ever, there was a phone call every single day. He's a homebody. I'm the gypsy. I love running around. And he did run around, and he did travel, and he did have an incredible schedule, but he was home in his heart every single day. So, of course, that was beautiful. We both understood that. There was never any conflict with that.
Well, we had 100 concerts a year for 21 years. She's had to suffer because people say, well, why don't you play with the Juilliard Quartet? Yeah. But the fact is that in the earlier days, they had a real issue with wives. They just made a policy that none of the wives are ever going to be involved in anything the quartet does, regardless of whether it's violin or whether it's piano or whatever, that they weren't going to allow that. Mm-hmm. So that was the policy when I came in. It just stayed that way.
Yeah. I never fought that because as I look back on it, I was not in any way prepared with the chamber music repertoire at the level where they were. I mean, I might have longed for it because I just loved what they did. And then Earl and I played together from the time we were married. We played, I think he's retired now, and his retiring made me retire from the Aspen Music Festival. But we did over 90 performances there, and we have the tapes of CDs of all of those performances. How that I could describe my growth, hopefully artistically, from the time we met, the combination of hearing the quartet literature at that level over and over and playing with Earl, I can't put that in words. I mean, that's why at age almost 80 that I am now, I just wanted to continue because I can feel what that has done to enhance every aspect of my life.
I'd like to thank Anne Shine and Earl Carlis for so generously taking the time to share their musical memories and insights with us. I'd also like to thank Donald Manildi, curator of the International Piano Archives at Maryland, for providing recordings. This is Jed Disler, artist in residence for the Classical Network. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I think we should all wish Anne Shine a most happy birthday. I look forward to all of us being together next week at this time for Between the Keys. This program is an exclusive production of the Classical Network and WWFM.org.